Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode on Conversations with the Facade Nigeria. We know that the previous episodes on our newly launched series, Legislative Council, has been interesting and enlightening. I mean, we believe that you guys have learned a lot, and there's still much more for you guys to know and learn. Today, we are looking at an address by His Excellency the Governor, Sir Bernard Bodilon, who was one of Nigeria's Governor Generals. He gave an address at the Legislative Council on the 17th of March, 1941. Not to waste too much of your time and to get right into it. Honorable members, last year, when I addressed you on this occasion, I did so in an atmosphere of uncertainty and doubt as to the trend of trade and economic conditions. The effects of the war on local conditions were beginning to be felt, reducing the volume of imports and consequently customs duties, and increasing expenditure owing to rising costs of materials and to emergency services. Nevertheless, although the difficulties of accurate estimating were fully realized at the time, and some of the revenue estimates were indeed almost conjectural, it was possible to present you with a balanced budget. It was, however, apparent early in the year that the estimated customs revenue would not be realized and might be less than the actual estimate by as much as £300,000. A substantial reduction of expenditure was anticipated in personal emolument as a result of the large number of officers on service with His Majesty's forces, but this was largely offset by the cost of emergency war measures. There were signs, therefore, of a considerable deficit at the end of the year unless revenue could be increased, and at a meeting of this council in September, last recourse was again had to supplementary taxation. Additional customs duties were then imposed, following a further revision of the customs tariff, and the rate of income tax on companies was raised from 2.66 to 4 shillings in the pound. The combined result of these measures being calculated to maintain revenue at or near the level of the estimate. The revised estimates now before councils show that this forecast was justified, for the estimated deficit for 1940 to 1941 is now expected to be no more than £30,000, and there is a possibility, as a result of the present activity in the export of granite, that there may not in fact be any deficit at all. The year 1940 to 1941, therefore, which began with surplus balances amounting to £1,294,000, should end with surplus balances of not more than £1,250,000. I would remind you, however, that this has only been achieved after the inclusion of £215,000 received from Native Authority Reserve Funds. As I explained fully to you last year, government, in accepting these contributions, undertakes a definite obligation to replenish Native Authorities' reserves as soon as its own financial position permits. I must emphasize again too the considerable financial assistance received as a result of the very generous decision of His Majesty's government to relieve us, for the time being at any rate, of most of the extra burden of military expenditure necessitated by the war. This is, of course, without prejudice to post-war settlement of the incidence of war costs in Africa. Turning to the prospects for the financial year 1941-42, we must at the outset assume for budgetary purposes that the war will continue for the whole of the year. It has been accepted as the financial policy of the British Empire that the colonies should endeavour to maintain existing services as near to the pre-war level as shortage of staff and material will permit, and if in consequence it is necessary to budget for a deficit, which in Nigeria is inevitable on account of decreasing revenue, it must be met from reserve funds. The estimates now laid before you have been prepared in accordance with this policy, and they show a deficit of £97,960. The real deficit is in fact larger than this by the sum of £215,000. The second of the 3 annual contributions by the native authorities to the central revenue. Whether this will prove a reasonable accurate forecast of the financial results of the coming year, it is of course impossible to say. It will be obvious to the council that in times when the events of a week or a month may have such far-reaching results as to disturb the economy of the whole world, estimates covering the period of a year ahead cannot be regarded otherwise than as an intelligent conjecture. But what I can claim is that, assuming the absence of actual hostilities in West Africa and assuming the same measure of assistance from His Majesty's government towards the control and purchase of our staple product as we have enjoyed during the present year, the estimates represent as intelligent and reasonable a conjecture as it is now possible to make. It is in the light of these considerations that I must again emphasize the extent to which this colony is now dependent on the power and resources of His Majesty's government, both as regards defense and finance. How much we owe to that protection will be overwhelmingly apparent to any who gives a moment's thought to what would happen were that protection and help to be restricted or withheld, a contingency which we all hope and trust will not arise. I will not weary you with the details of next year's estimates, which are fully explained in the Financial Secretary's memorandum accompanying the estimates. I will confine myself to a few general remarks. The adverse factors to which I referred last year are now showing an increasing influence on revenue. Customs duties, which are the main source of revenue, are estimated to produce £256,000 less than last year. Of this sum, £70,000 represents the decrease in import duties and £186,000 the decrease in export duties. Reduced shipping, higher prices of imported goods and imports, and export control have combined to reduce the total imports and exports, with a corresponding reduction in duty. This reduction would have been much greater but for the increased duties which were brought into force during the current financial year. Apart from the increase in the estimates of mining revenue, an increase which is apparent only because this year's figure was underestimated, the only large increase of revenue is that from the West African Currency Board, which has this year resumed its usual distribution of profits to the West African government. The total revenue shows a net increase of £38,200, but there is in fact a net decrease of £160,000. This difference is the result of a change of method in accounting for the relief afforded to the railway from interest charges, which has hitherto been allowed as a deduction from revenue, but is now shown in its true light as a subsidy to the railway. An increase of £14,000 expected under the income tax head. You will be asked at this session to pass an amendment to the law raising the rates of tax on incomes of £800 and over. No further increase in respect of lower incomes is at present contemplated, but I must warn the council that such an increase may become necessary in the future. As regards expenditure, there is, I fear, little scope for any substantial reduction, especially as it is the policy of government to maintain services as near to the pre-war level as possible, for a very large proportion of our expenditure is made up of fixed charges. The system of rationing departmental expenditure provision was again applied in the preparation of the estimates, but after 3 years of such compression, departmental expenditure votes are almost all incapable of further reduction unless services are to be curtailed. Some votes, in fact, must be increased because of rising prices of materials and equipment. And after careful consideration, I have authorized increases of the Agriculture and Education Department estimates. The former in order to provide for schemes of local food production and general agricultural development and research, and the latter for an increase of £26,000 in the grants to assisted schools so that arrears of increments can be paid to mission school teachers. Other increases are included under the Aviation, Military and West African Governors Conference heads of expenditure, amounting in all to some £60,000. The large increase under the subventions head is on account of the subsidy of £200,000 to the railway and is counterbalanced by a corresponding increase of revenue. In spite of these large increases, amounting in all to about £310,000, the total expenditure estimate is increased by £112,000 only, revealing that reductions of departmental expenditure of some £200,000 have in fact been achieved, inclusive of the saving resulting from the amalgamation of the port services with the Marine Department, making allowance for the fact that £60,000 of this reduction is on account of an arbitrary and non-recurrent reduction of contribution to the Marine Renewals Fund, and for the fact that there are fairly large savings from the emolument of officials on service with His Majesty's Forces. This substantial reduction of expenditure is a considerable achievement, particularly when it is remembered what a large proportion of the total expenditure is either fixed or self-balancing. As regards railway finances, in my address last year, I reported that the deficit on railway working for the year 1938 to 1939 was £473,000. In the year 1939 to 1914, the deficit amounted to £326,000, while the revised estimate for the current year showed an estimated deficit of £161,000. Again, in the 1941 to 1942 railway estimate, an estimated deficit of £133,000 is shown, so that over a period of 4 years, taking actual and estimated figures together, the total deficit amounts to well over £1 million, in spite of a subsidy of £200,000 per annum from government towards interest payment. It is clear from these figures that, contrary to earlier expectations, the railway is in fact incapable of meeting its very high capital charges and at the same time to make full contributions to the renewals fund. As I informed you a year ago, the whole question of railway finance is a cause of anxiety to the government, and the introduction of certain changes is still under examination. It was hoped to have the benefit of the advice of a visiting commission. A highly experienced officer had actually been selected in consultation with me while I was on leave, but the events of last spring made it impossible to spare his services, and it has been decided to postpone any general revision of the railway rate structure until after the war. It is my immediate concern to see if it will not be possible to afford greater assistance to the railway towards its capital charges, after ensuring that the present rate of contribution to the renewals fund is fully justified, and it is possible that later in the year I may ask Council to make supplementary provision for an increased subsidy to the railway. The details of the railway draft estimate for 1941 to 1942 I explained in the General Manager's Memorandum, and it is sufficient for me to say here that, apart from the question whether the proportion of Africans employed in certain railway services could not with advantage be increased, a question which is at this moment under examination, I am satisfied that the railway estimates have been prepared with due regard to economy and that working costs compare favorably with those of other African colonial railways. The finances of the railway are at present suffering from the effects of restricted imports and exports, and the only hope of genuine improvement is in the restoration of trade. Last year, I informed honorable members that the whole question of port control was receiving the consideration of government, and shortly after the budget session, a report on the subject by the port engineer was referred to a joint meeting of the Economic and Transport Advisory Board and Ports Advisory Board for their advice. The board's reported unanimously that, prima facie, a case existed for the amalgamation of the Ports Department with the Marine Department, and advised that a technical committee should be set up to examine this finding and to make recommendations regarding the details of the amalgamation. This advice was accepted and a committee appointed. This committee endorsed the finding of the boards and recommended that the Director of Marine should assume responsibility for the ports of Nigeria and that his department should absorb the existing port department. To ensure that the valuable harbour works at Lagos and Port Harcourt should continue to receive expert technical supervision, the committee advised that a civil engineer with experience of harbour works should be seconded from the staff of the Public Works Department to the Marine Department as port engineer, directly responsible to the Director of Marine. As a further safeguard, it was subsequently decided that the harbour works should be inspected annually by the Director of Public Works in consultation with the Director of Marine and port engineer. These proposals have been accepted by the Secretary of State and will come into force on April the 1st. The disappearance of the port department from the estimate provides an immediate saving of some £8,800, and I am hopeful that experience of the working of the amalgamated department may be productive of further economies. I have made one or two references to the assistance that Nigeria is receiving from the British government. Last year, I spoke to you at some length of the new policy which His Majesty's government was about to introduce in regard to the development of the colonies, a policy involving financial assistance to the tune of £5 million a year. I spoke to the Secretary of State about this directly. I got to England in March, as he mentioned, as Nigeria's probable ration out of this sum, a figure which even I, who was prepared to open my mouth pretty wide on behalf of Nigeria, could not but regard as highly satisfactory. A few days later, I listened to Mr. MacDonald moving the second reading of the necessary bill in the House of Commons. The House listened with interest, and there was no opposition. But from the somewhat poor attendance, it was clear that the general feeling was that the issue was likely in the near future to become somewhat academic. And so it proved to be. The event of last spring, culminating in the terrific burden thrown on the shoulders of the British government by the collapse of France, made it obviously out of the question for the colonies to expect immediate grants for development purposes unless the objects were immediately concerned with the war effort. Indeed, the colonies themselves would, I am confident, have refused to accept grants for other purposes. I was particularly anxious to accept grants for other I was particularly anxious to secure, at the earliest possible moment, a grant for educational purposes, out of which I proposed to increase the grants to missions in order to finance arrears of increment due to mission teachers, and to start a provident fund. At several discussions on this subject at the Colonial Office, who were very sympathetic, but it has now decided that no grant for this purpose can yet be forthcoming. As you will observe, however, I have, with the prior approval of the Secretary of State, included additional expenditure to the extent of £26,000 for this purpose in the estimates now before you. I have made it clear to the Secretary of State that, although this expenditure falls within the normal obligations of the government, it is one which is beyond the power of the government to discharge from its ordinary resources, and that in due course I shall apply for assistance by way of a grant for increased educational facilities. Although action under the new policy, except in respect of objects directly connected with the war effort, has been suspended, and although in present circumstances, it is not easy for His Majesty's government to make definite promises as regards long-term policy, it is their present intention to implement the new colonial development policy after the war, if not sooner. And now I propose to abandon my usual practice of reviewing Seratim, the work of the various government departments during the past year and their programs for the future, and instead to try and give a picture of what Nigeria is doing by way of war effort. I will deal first with the reactions of the people of the country to the war, and would then try and give you a general picture of how the government departments are facing up to the altered conditions and increased strain which the war has imposed on them. Since the beginning of the war, 418 Europeans and 16,000 Africans have joined the Nigerian forces, many of whom are now serving overseas, where the Nigerian Brigade has created the most favorable impression by its fighting ability, orderly bearing, smartness, and cheerfulness, and has acquitted itself so well as to earn special commendation from General Sir Archibald Wavell. The response to the growing demands of the military establishment has been satisfactory and has been greatly stimulated in the northern provinces by the introduction of a territorial system which ensures that recruits from the same area train and serve together. The emirs have shown a great interest in this development. There is at present a shortage of motor drivers for whom there is a big demand. The demand for recruits for all services is likely to increase, and a time may come when the present voluntary system will prove inadequate. There has also been a most satisfactory response to the demand for the Nigerian Defence Volunteers and for the various civil defence services, ARP, firefighting, first aid, etc. I cannot give you the full numbers, but a few weeks ago in Lagos, I inspected the very fine parade of over 1,500 civil defence workers. Private subscriptions to the various war funds, including those in aid of the war in Greece, have amounted since the beginning of the war to over £111,000, while 34 interest-free loans amounting to about £9,000 have been made to His Majesty's government for the duration of the war. In addition, Nigeria's savings certificates have been sold to about the same amount. These certificates provide everyone in this country with an opportunity to give material assistance to the war effort and to benefit themselves at the same time. And I hope that all Nigerians will follow the magnificent example of the people of Great Britain in reducing expenditure and lending every available penny to His Majesty's government. The Northern Emirs have been regularly surrendering to the government a percentage of their salary, and almost everywhere has payment of tax been exceptionally prompt, a state of affairs which reflects equal credit on the native authorities and on the taxpayers themselves. The various produce schemes sponsored by His Majesty's government have maintained prices at a reasonable, though not a high level, and one result of the inevitable reduction of imports has been a considerable increase on local trade, with the result that the general run of the population have so far suffered very little from the war. In fact, the markets in the big towns I have visited during recent months have been noticeably more lively and prosperous than they were in the year immediately preceding the war. But behind all these, there are certain classes of people who have undoubtedly suffered. The various produce schemes have stabilized, but have also considerably reduced the profit of the produce trader, while the reduction in imports has reduced the profits of the dealers in imported goods. The people of the western provinces have had their export trade in palm kernels prohibited, and the transport owner has seen his earnings seriously reduced as a result of the rationing of petrol, a measure which incidentally has been a very real contribution to the war effort. These losses have on the whole been borne cheerfully and without complaint. There have been disturbances, very regrettably disturbances, both in the western and the eastern provinces, but these have had nothing whatever to do with the war, and I should like to express to the people of Nigeria in general my appreciation of their loyalty, their readiness to help, and their ready acceptance of such sacrifices as the war has imposed upon them. I should also like to say a word of thanks to the Nigerian press. They have been occasionally guilty of publishing unfounded rumors without sufficient inquiry as to their accuracy, and there have been recent lapses into language which the wildest stretch of imagination could scarcely classify as dignified. But they have given their full and unstinted support to every aspect of the war effort and have given practical evidence of a desire to cooperate with the government in the maintenance of law and order. In particular, they have given full publicity to the government's many plans for increasing local production and have made some useful constructive suggestions in this connection. I am very grateful to them. The Nigerian government has, on the motion of this council, provided a sum of £100,000 towards the cost of the war. And now to turn to the effect of the war on the various government departments and the efforts that they have made to cope with the altered circumstances. If I appear to give undue prominence to the agriculture and veterinary departments, I hope that the other departments will forgive me. I am not unmindful of the difficulties which they have had to contend owing to shortages of men and material. The administrative department alone, for example, is carrying on with little more than 2/3 of its normal establishment, but the majority of them have had to curtail rather than to extend their activities, or rather they have had to try and avoid curtailing their activities in spite of having less men, money and material. While the agricultural and veterinary departments have been given new tasks to perform and have therefore a somewhat more spectacular record. On the outbreak of war, I had to consider how best the resources of Nigeria could be utilized to assist the prosecution of the war, and I decided that our policy should be 1. To be ready to provide such raw materials as the imperial government may require from time to time. 2. To make Nigeria as self-supporting as possible and so reduce our demands on Great Britain's food supplies and on shipping space. And 3. To do as much as possible to make West Africa as a whole self-supporting. This policy was subsequently confirmed by the Secretary of State, who indicated that such steps as we might be able to take to implement it would be a real contribution to the Empire's war effort. He also pointed out that in planning our food production schemes, we should ensure that as far as possible, they fitted in with the general policy of agricultural development so that they would have a permanent value. This has been borne in mind. The government has embarked on no expensive food production schemes merely as wartime emergency measures. It has, however, done its best to draw the attention of farmers to the new opportunities caused by war conditions, to assist them to take advantage of these opportunities and to find markets for their produce. By these means, a considerable measure of success has been achieved. It would be appreciated by honorable members that in wartime events move so rapidly that it is difficult for those at the head of affairs in England to draw up a fixed program of their requirements for several months in advance. And even if they are able to do so, such a program may have to be altered at short notice. In the matter of providing raw materials, we have therefore often had to work with insufficient advance information, which has necessitated the adjustment of our production at short notice. And we have had to prepare, and we have had to be prepared to store or destroy surplus produce. As you are aware, last season's light crop of cocoa had to be destroyed, and in order to curtail the production of palm kernels, I had to ask the people of the Western Provinces to make a contribution to the war effort by submitting to a ban on the export of palm kernels from certain areas. In the Eastern Provinces, it has been necessary to restrict purchases to a definite figure, namely the average of the previous 3 years. As against these restrictions, we have increased our production of granules from 160,000 tons in 1940 to approximately 225,000 tons in 1940 to 1941, and are cutting from 50,000 bales to approximately 70,000 bales. An encouraging start has been made to meet a request for cassava starch, and a promising new industry is being developed, which I hope will remain with us after the war. This, however, depends upon whether we can ensure that the quality of our starch compares favorably with that produced in other countries, and it will shortly be necessary to introduce regulations to ensure that all starch is inspected before being shipped. To date, some 1,500 to 2,000 tons have been purchased, all of which was produced in areas from which the export of palm kernels has been restricted. In the Abeokuta province alone, some 13,000 pounds has been put into circulation as a result of the starch industry. The suggestion that the starch industry has caused a shortage of gari does not at present seem to be based on reliable evidence, and I am satisfied that the supplies of raw cassava are adequate for both industries. Our efforts to make Nigeria self-supporting in foodstuffs and to assist other West African colonies have made useful progress. They have, however, been complicated by the sudden demand for foodstuff which arose as a result of the rapid increase in the military establishment, and they have been handicapped by the difficulty which has naturally been experienced in obtaining delivery of machinery ordered from England. The response to the government's advice to grow more food was very satisfactory, and the production of our staple food crops such as guinea corn, millet, maize, yams, cassava, beans, peppers, etc., has been sufficient to ensure an adequate supply of food for both civilians and local military requirements. There has been a considerable increase in the movement of foodstuffs by rail, which has been materially assisted by the introduction of special railway rates for country produce and the conversion of two goods vehicles into cold storage vans. It is, of course, extremely difficult to ascertain the exact production of these local foodstuffs, but it seems likely that in some instances we already have a surplus which is available for export to other colonies. I hope that there will be no relaxation of effort in connection with food production during the forthcoming season. The demands for foodstuff from the Gold Coast and Sierra Leone, especially from the military authorities, are steadily increasing, and one of Nigeria's contributions to the war will be to make every effort to meet these demands. The recent sharp rise in the price of foodstuff in towns such as Lagos was not, I think, generally justified by the supply situation. And while there may have been some dislocation of transport facilities due to the petrol restrictions, speculation was undoubtedly the chief cause. The government therefore decided to fix prices, and it is notable that since this was commenced, prices have in some instances fallen below the fixed maximum. Every effort is being made to ensure that the prices fixed affect all interest, but it will be appreciated that at first there will almost certainly be cases of hardship which will subsequently have to be rectified. The study of what happens to produce between the producer and the consumer is one of the many problems which is engaging the attention of the marketing officer. There has been a big increase in rice production during the last year or two, and Nigeria is now self-supporting in this commodity. In 1936 and 37, we imported 14,900 tons and 13,600 tons of rice respectively. But in 1940, we imported only 2,700 tons and imports have now virtually ceased. There is, however, no shortage of rice, and in addition to meeting the local requirements of the military authorities, we have been able to agree to the export of 1,000 tons to the Gambia. It is probable that the total production of rice in Nigeria is now in the neighborhood of 40,000 tons per annum, and a further increase during the next year or two can be anticipated. There has also been a satisfactory increase in the production of potatoes. During 1940, total production was approximately 400 tons, a figure which is within easy reach of the normal peacetime requirement of Nigeria, which was estimated at 500 tons. An attempt to be made in 1941 not only to meet the whole of Nigeria's requirements, including those of the military, but also to provide an appreciable surplus for other West African colonies. Efforts are also being made to increase the dry season crop with a view to filling the gap which exists between the end of one main season crop and the beginning of the next. In order to stimulate production by giving confidence to the producer, the minimum price to the producer has been fixed by the food controller. There is no doubt whatever that we can find the market in West Africa for a much larger tonnage of potatoes that we are producing at present, and as it is a very suitable crop for the African farmer where conditions are suitable. We hope that we are building up an industry which will remain after the present emergency is over. New supplies of seed have been ordered and an agricultural officer is being sent to Bamenda to try and stimulate potato production in that area. We should benefit considerably from this completion of the Mamfe Bamenda Road, a fine piece of engineering of which the Public Works Department have good reason to be proud. An attempt is also being made to develop an export trade in onions. There has already been a considerable increase in production, and although it is impossible to give figures, it is estimated that this is not less than 10%. Not only have all local requirements, including those of the military authorities, been met, but during the last few months, 40 tons have been exported to the Gold Coast and Sierra Leone. This industry has considerable possibilities, but much investigational work on such matters as preparation, packing, and the choice of the best variety will be necessary if it is to become permanent. While we cannot hope to make Nigeria self-supporting in sugar, a village sugar industry is gradually being developed in the northern provinces. This industry started in the Zaria province on a very small scale, but during the year, new crushers were obtained and operated, and a start was made in the Sokoto and Niger provinces. It is anticipated that 100 tons of sugar will be manufactured this season. This quantity will probably be more than doubled next season. Although the sugar produced cannot compare with refined imported sugar, the quality has been greatly improved and it finds a ready market in the northern provinces. It is now widely used by Europeans, and regular consignments are being supplied to the military authorities at Zaria. A scheme to enable producers to market their sugar through a central organization has been started, and although difficulties have been encountered, it has worked fairly satisfactorily and will be continued. So guys, this is part one of Sir Bernard Bodilon's speech. Expect part two in the next episode that we're going to drop after this. We hope you guys are enjoying the new series on Legislative Council. If you're just listening for the first time, please go back. We have previous episodes that you need to listen to, basically giving you background, taking you into proceedings of the Legislative Council from colonial Lagos, that's Lagos Colony, up until independence, and also bills, proclamations, ordinances, even speeches like this one in this episode of the governor or governor general. So guys, we'll see you guys when next we see you. Don't forget to share our podcast with family and friends. See you guys next time. Cheers.